Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Q Commentator. My name's Nick Heath and a special welcome to you if this is your first time listening. But an even lovelier welcome to you if you're returning after episode 1 with the wonderful Barry Davis. Not a bad place to start in terms of a commentating legend. It can clearly only go downhill from there. But we're fairly confident that our man in this week's episode will impress, inspire and entertain just as much as Barry in week 1, albeit they are in very different sports and with very different styles. Grateful to all of you who've tuned in. Several hundred of you did, which I'm really thrilled with. So thank you so much. A few of you have left some star reviews on iTunes, which is brilliant. Chalky J is the only one so far to have actually put a few words down. Chalky J, I'm very grateful. Chalky says, great to hear a commentator like Nick in conversation with broadcasting royalty like Barry Davis. Promises to be a fascinating series of interviews with other famous voices in the trade. Davis spoke so eloquently about his path into and through the profession, encouraged expertly in the interview by Heath. Well worth subscribing. Well, thank you, Chalky J. I really would encourage more of you to leave a little review, give me some comments on there as to maybe even who else you would like to hear over the course of future episodes and series. Also through social media on Twitter, or Deadly replied, really enjoyed it. Think I was in the minority preferring Barry Davis to John Motson. Of course, that was the old rivalry, wasn't it? I don't think you are in the minority necessarily. Mark Donaldson, who had the privilege of commentating alongside Barry in 2016. Thank you for your message, Mark. Great to hear from you. Graham Easton is enjoying the concept. And actually, I think that's part of the most pleasing bit, really, because although everyone's heard a commentator at some point, my only concern is whether people give two hoots about the detail and what it takes. But enjoyably, many of you are coming with me through this podcast in these conversations, and that's wonderful. Ali Stokes, thanks very much for your support. Also to Brian Moore, Macca at TalkSport, and BT's Nick Mullins, all of whom seem to enjoy episode 1. Nick tweeting beautifully, as he does, about sitting at the knee of the godfather of commentary, which was a gorgeous image relating to the great Barry Davis. So I am thankful for that. Incidentally, you can watch my chat with Barry. I'm not in it, you'll be pleased to hear, apart from posing the questions and chatting a bit. It's trained on Barry in his front room at youtube.com or .com / rugby media. youtube.com/rugby media if you want to watch Barry in the flesh. Also, a thanks to Jack Fallon, Dan Killick, and fellow journalist Adam Hathaway. Hathas, thanks for your support as well. And I think in particular, well, this week's episode is for you. John Hunt, BBC racing commentator. Plus, he's shown his talents on their coverage of the Olympics as well, as you'll hear, swimming a particular joy of his to cover. He's a former nurse, a former policeman, and as you'll hear, he gets into commentary because he just decides to give it a go. And I rather like that. You'll hear how an Australian ripped up the rulebook on racing commentary in terms of style. You'll hear about John's first big race in April 1993, the Scottish Grand National. You'll hear how he describes his voice. Those of you who know John Hunt's voice, it's very clear, but he's got a hell of a range, gets up to some fantastic high notes through his commentary. And I wanted to find out about that. We'll hear how he warms up his voice, in particular which popular music artist and song he uses to get there. And I'm going to give this a try, I think, because, I really enjoy chatting about that. And as we found out with Barry, and as you may discover over the course of more of these conversations that are already in the can, these people who, you know, are synonymous with these big moments and we know have nailed it, in theory, actually, some of them want to go back and do those again. And we'll hear from John as to which one of those in particular he's referring to. I had the opportunity to speak to John. He invited me down to Windsor Racecourse, where he was due to be commentating later on that day. I got down there a few hours before it was all due to start, got my parking space that John had allocated to me, and I was expecting to find him in a media room or a sort of annex room where I'd said we need a relatively quiet space for an hour. And when I got there, he said, well, look, it's quiet enough. We could take a couple of these garden chairs so they're in the hospitality area and put them on the far end of the parade ring, which was quite special. So it was a gorgeous warm afternoon, and I set the microphones up and we sat and began to converse. You may even at points hear the gentle noises of the tannoy and announcements and clippity-clops of hooves in the background. But as you will hear, John was incredibly warm and welcoming to me, and that, I think, is why I have so much fondness for this particular interview. You know, I was absolutely in awe of Barry Davis when I spoke to him, but John was on a slightly different level and a thoroughly enjoyable one at the same time. So I hope you get as much out of this as I did. I think it's a brilliant listen. So, Cue commentator John Hunt. Good afternoon.
And to you, Nick. Nice to welcome you to Windsor. Thameside, sun's out. What a beautiful night ahead.
It certainly is looking like it will be. An advert in the Harrow Observer for a trainee commentator with Ladbrokes.
Yeah.
And you've never looked back. Why did it appeal?
As a young kid watching racing with my dad, I was always aware that I could pick horses out. I was quite a good identifier, because Dad wasn't, you know. So one of our partnership needed to be able to pick them out. So on a very fundamental, rudimental basis, I was able to... I knew I could do it. And then when that job advert appeared, I was in the police force, and my wife was in Harrow, hence the newspaper you referred to. She saw the advert. And we were young and carefree and all the rest of it. And she said, why don't you just give it a go? And I just thought, yeah, why don't I just give it a go? Because, and obviously, it was obviously a trainee post, so no great pressure. And work were brilliant, because they said if it didn't work out, you could come back. And so I thought, well, as someone who likes a gamble every now and then, that seemed a pretty good gamble to take, didn't it, really?
Played it to your hands. I mean, you say you were a policeman at the time, you trained as a nurse, you were working in a news agency. Was there any concern in your head, like, oh, this is another change of career path or anything like that?
Different times, weren't they, really? Mm. I was just busy being happy, you know. I enjoyed every single thing I did, you know, and just moved from job to job for a variety of different reasons. I mean, joining the Met Police, I wanted to get back to London. That was the main thing. I was out in the countryside. That part of it, I liked the nursing, but that part of it didn't really suit me. So, coming back to London was the big pull there. And, you've got to be a policeman for like 40 hours a week. Oh, well, okay, we'll see how that goes. And to be honest, it was a great job for a young man. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed my time there. But, yeah, this was an unexpected diversion. Took a chance, a small chance. They were obviously not setting the bar too high in terms of expectations on ability. I just rolled along. And my first week with them, Royal Ascot, sat down watching Royal Ascot.
Wow.
Getting paid for it. I'm thinking, well, this is all right.
This'll do. Yeah. When you started to train and do it for the first time, I mean, it's a job which requires an element of self-belief, let's be honest.
Yeah.
What did you think of your ability?
I thought I had it in terms of the basics. But with that came a realization that I had to brush up on the stuff that I wasn't so hot on.
Mm. And was that information, or was that a...
So much information. It was about mechanics, putting things together, breathing properly. It was about acknowledging that a 14-runner race over a mile at Goodwood was really... You're talking about speaking for 2 minutes.
Right, yeah.
Two very different things, really. One and the same, but two very different things. So, I had to work on that. That took me a little bit of time. But we were so lucky in terms of, I say we because I started at the same time as Richard Hoyles as well, ITV commentator. And the firm we worked for after Ladbrokes, this is when we became mainstream commentators, 2 or 3 years after that.
Yeah.
They let us have basically a year in the field doing it as paid practice, really. And, oh, that was, you just wouldn't get that now. That was worth its weight in gold. That was a wonderful opportunity.
Who were you listening to? Were there voices out there that you liked, or that anyone you were sort of wanting to emulate?
I don't think so. Obviously, O'Sullivan, Peter O'Sullivan was the big name of horse racing. You know, when I first started, horse racing commentary was very much the sort of old gentleman's ex-military sort of club. So there were a lot of very similar voices who, I remember thinking, you know, they can obviously do it.
Mm.
And some of them, like Rawley Gilbert, had a voice made of honey. You know, it was just delicious to listen to.
Mm.
But it was all pretty similar.
Yeah, okay.
And it was only really when the Australian Jim McGrath came to this country and completely ripped up the rule book so far as horse racing commentary was concerned.
How would you describe that? What do you mean?
It was... He had a completely different rhythm to his work. He introduced new phrases that had never been heard before. He had an incredible pace to his work as well.
Mm-hmm.
A vibrancy that, again, this sounds like a slight on those that went before. It's not.
Yeah.
It was just different.
Yeah.
And as a young man entering that world, it gave you license to maybe try a few different things and not try and be Jim McGrath, but it just said Jim's presence made us all, I think, realise, look, there's not one way of doing this and one way only.
Yeah, and sort of punchier metaphors, that sort of thing. Are these the sort of things that were making you feel I can do this a different way?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Jim had that famous scraping paint line, you know, meaning racing right up against the near running rail and stuff like that. You know, it's only a very simple thing, but you know, Lieutenant Brigadier whoever wouldn't have said that sort of thing.
It's provocative, isn't it? It takes you there.
Yeah, definitely. Jim's a marvellous commentator, marvellous broadcaster. So many of the Aussie racing commentators were and still are.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think over in Australia, we think over here we get a fair bit of stick if we get things wrong and stuff. But over there, I think it's a pretty thankless environment.
Pretty savage, is it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
So Jim came with those sort of scars, if you like, over to here. And, oh my God, it was fantastic. A breath of fresh air.
Yeah. And, I mean, I would describe it, I don't know if you do, if people do, as linear commentary, because you've got the start point, you're going straight through and you're hitting the end.
Mm.
And so it's a particular style that requires a range.
Yeah.
You know, certainly in more explosive sport like football, when suddenly a goal could come out of nowhere, suddenly you're hitting top range. But you can see it coming in a horse race. I've actually been told sometimes in my rugby commentary that because I can speak quickly when needed to, I get a bit horse racy.
Okay.
And the producer giving me that note is wanting to get that across negatively. And I'm thinking,
that sounds a criticism to me. I don't like the way this is going.
Yeah. Horses for courses, as we might say. But it's right when it's horse racing and perhaps to be going, and it's Saracens, they're coming around the corner, they're going to get the chance to score the ball, you know, score the try on the corner, that kind of thing is maybe not what someone wants to hear as a producer of a rugby show, but it is obviously meat and drink to a racing commentator. And how have you found that from the very beginning in terms of, you know, your range? Because you hit some brilliant high tenor notes when they're crossing the line, and you have to be very in touch, I imagine, with your range and where you can go.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, an early example, going back to my first big race in April of 1993, it was the Scottish Grand National, i.e., going back to what we were talking about earlier, not just 4.5 miles round air racecourse, but 10 minutes of solid broadcasting.
Yeah.
And the favourite, a horse called Run for Free, planted himself right at the start. And just for like 8-10 seconds, looked like he wasn't going to take part.
Yeah.
And this is my first big race. And
great.
And I'm pretty much through the roof within 20 seconds.
Yeah, okay.
And then, of course,
where are you going from
there? How do you bring this back now? How do you And there was a good finish as well. And he, the same horse, Run for Free, eventually won the race, which was, an incredible story. He beat, that day, he beat a horse called Merry Master, who was ridden by a female jockey, G. Armitage, which back then was potentially huge story. You know that she could win. So there were all these threads.
Yeah.
And I was completely hanging on. So, yeah, I mean, hitting highs at the right time. But you see, it's funny you should say about pace and stuff. Like people come up to me and say, "Oh yeah, well, you're a racing commentator. Go on, do a bit like this."
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, like there's, I don't, I'm looking hard, but there's no moving horses with jockeys on them anywhere near, you know. And I say, "What you mean, like, do that." And it's like, well, is our job really just rapidly
just gabble?
Yeah. Is that what people think it is really? And of course, it's not, is it? It's not.
No.
I mean, we've got a really fine bunch of British commentators at the moment, and none of them are gabblers. They're all trying to convey excitement, but be accurate above and anything else. Above,
well, it's no good if it's not accurate, is it?
And well, no one would stand for it, Nick.
No,
you know, you've got to be. No point in being a shouty screamer and then getting the wrong first three across the line.
Yeah.
You'd last a night, or maybe two or three races.
But how would you describe your voice?
I'd say it's strong. I always try and work on vocabulary.
Okay. Thesaurus time.
Because sometimes in the heat of a moment, it's always the easiest thing, isn't it, to just rely on the same expressions. When Frankel was winning his 14 straight races, I did most of them for Five Live, and they did a montage when he retired. And I just thinking, God, I'm saying the same thing every time.
Oh, right.
Effortless was the word, and that summed him up perfectly. But
you'd rather he didn't sum him up 14 times.
Precisely. Looking back, I thought, can I re-speak one or two of these?
Yeah.
And maybe pick another word. So, I think I've got a strong voice. People say I'm excitable. Am I excitable? I'm excited by the sport.
Well, that's what you need.
If that makes me excitable, then that's fine. That can be both an accurate description and a little bit of a veiled insult, really, can't it? I've been called dull and excitable on the same day. So
wow.
I'm not really too worried about what people think or what people have to say. But I think my voice is strong, and I think it's important in racing on big days as well. I think you need a voice that can sort of cut through.
Yes.
Crowd noise especially.
Yeah. So you need a little bit of nasal quality in there to actually get
through. Definitely. Yeah, definitely. So and I think I can do that.
Yeah. I've heard you do that, so yes you can.
Yeah, I think I can do that. I think I can do that.
Do you warm the voice up? Do you see a big day coming ahead and think I need to just do something?
Occasionally,
we've got the clippity clop of hooves in the background to prove to you that we're outside at Windsor Racecourse. How lovely.
Aren't they beautiful?
He's just checking the form as well as they come past.
Yeah. I do. Not all the time.
Yeah.
Big days I do.
Okay.
I'll have the last 10 minutes of a drive to the Grand National or Cheltenham especially. I'll have a bit of Paradise by the Dashboard Light, which is a song by Meatloaf.
Oh yeah.
You're so young, you wouldn't
I know Meatloaf.
You wouldn't have ever heard of that. But the interesting thing about that song is it's got such a range. It's got a male and female voice in it.
Can you do them both?
Well, I try to, because the female voice on the song is almost conversational, but quite quick.
Yeah,
Meatloaf is Meatloaf.
He's got a hell of a belt on him.
He has got a hell of a belt on him. But interestingly enough, he starts off and builds to a crescendo in this particular song, and the crescendo is a really significant crescendo as well. So I think by the time I've got to the end of that song, I'm ready for the Grand National.
And if you're cracking through the end of that song, are you worried?
Yeah, exactly. But it's a really good vocal warm-up.
No, that's good.
There's a bit of everything in there.
Yeah. No, that sounds nice. Have you had moments when it's let you down?
Voice?
Yeah.
I've been... usually when you've got colds and things like that,
yeah,
and you've gone for a big line and you can feel the tightening of your your throat.
Yeah, I had to do Japanese top league at 4 a.m. with effectively whooping cough, which was quite a challenge.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's all sorts of gadgets now, cough buttons and stuff on your equipment where you can squeeze in a quick cough where no one notices.
Yeah.
But sometimes when there's, you know, when there's only 100 yards left to go, and you can feel the cough coming, you think, God, am I going to make it home in time?
Yeah.
So that can be a little bit scary, but thankfully, you know, coughs and colds. I think you can take, if you've got a cold, you tailor yourself a little bit, don't you, to the task in hand. You just bring it down a few levels. Yeah,
get a little closer on the mic.
Try and manage your potential difficulties.
Talk me through a commentary for a big one, a Cheltenham or a Grand National. I mean, obviously, these days there will be sort of 2 or 3 or 4 voices on them, particularly for the bigger races. But, you know, in football, rugby, there's a scene set because it's relatively episodic. You know, Sunday afternoon, last game of the weekend, Leicester Tigers at home, playing to make top 4, this kind of thing.
Mm.
Is there a top that you would write in terms of opening on a race?
That's a great question. Because I always take the view that the Grand National or one of the big races at the Cheltenham Festival are very much like a cup final.
Mm.
And I would like to think, I'm a bit of an old romantic, I'd like to think that a cup final, a World Cup final, will always sell itself, no matter what the component parts of that particular final are.
Yeah.
And obviously, when you get to Aintree or Cheltenham, there are layers of stories, aren't there? Threads, some more relevant, some more important than others. But I my favourites have always over the years been where the horses have been the headline makers.
Yeah.
The Corto Stars and the Denmans.
But would you write anything at all in those openings? Or do you just, once they're said, and at the start line, it's John Hunt?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't. Okay. I wouldn't pre-prepare anything very much. I would prepare for the end.
Okay.
And that's not...
Oh, well, that's a little different then. Okay, yeah.
And that's not the written word. That's not the written commentary.
Yeah.
Verbatim.
Yeah.
It's you've got to be aware of the stories and how you can quickly illustrate that right at the end of a race.
Yeah, okay.
And, of course, that's depending on how much time you've got. If it's a very close finish, there's not too much explanatory time, is there? But if say, Denman wins the second Hennessy by 12 lengths, which he did, then you've got time to...
contextualise the result.
Completely.
Tell you how many winners in a row
exactly.
that is.
Has this ever been done before, for example? Has it ever been done before?
Yeah.
Like this? Drawing comparisons with the great Arkell, you know, and there you're into major league stories then, you know. And that's always been my... happiest time when there's been see the stars on the flat, Frankel on the flat, they were the same.
Yeah.
Except I like jumping a bit more than flat racing. But whenever the horse is the story, that's always I'm not that bothered if a horse I quite like it. If a horse has won the same race 4 times, that's all nice, isn't it? And stuff.
Yeah.
If only 16 greys have ever won this race, I'm not that fussed about that sort of line. Do you know what I mean?
The sort of long history of facts and stats isn't relevant. But,
yeah.
But a personal story.
Yeah.
To one is. Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
How do you prep that? You know, obviously in a rugby game these days, there's 46 names to go through. You must look at a race card and the number of runners and go, right, I've got some work to do here. Is that as simple as that?
Yeah. Well,
how it works?
You get a 40 runner Grand National always, and of course. I think, you know, so long as victory for one of them isn't going to completely knock you sideways, you know, and think, what do I say to that?
Yeah.
Oh, first time number 28's won a Grand National.
Yeah.
For
well, by its very nature, an outsider is going to win every now and then.
Yeah.
And you've got to make sure you've got a line. I heard your 2013 Grand National with Aurora's Encore winning, and I think your line into the finish was virtually unmentioned.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if that was a mental signal of, oh, bugger, we haven't mentioned them and they've come from nowhere.
There might have been an element in that, really. Yeah. There might have been an element in that, but you know, it was true. Aurora's Encore and Monmouth before that at 100-1. You know, they were horses who were, in all the build-ups, in all the previews, given absolutely, in all the, you know, not an inch of text in any of the papers or online at all. So And with, I remember Aurora's Encore winning as well, like, and it was just so quiet.
Mm.
You know, and I like to, if you're there, yes, Aurora's Encore's gone and won the National unconsidered, virtually unconsidered, and this place right now would normally be going absolutely potty, but right now, you know, you could hear a crisp packet rustle 100 yeah. yards away.
Yeah.
You know, just that sort of, because yeah. on radio, you know, it's...
You've got to bring it across.
I think so, yeah.
And if there's nothing to bring...
Yeah. But nothing can be a valuable thing to...
Well, true, yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, how do I bring you that? Yeah, well, yeah. exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, ID and things like that, that's down to colours.
Yeah.
Excuse my ignorance. I mean, obviously all horses are different. Can you recognise well-known horses?
So, yeah, some yeah. of them, yeah. There was a famous... there was a funny moment in the trade paper, The Racing Post, the other day. There was a horse called Stradivarius who was going for a £1 million bonus at York if he were to win. And they did a lovely shot of Stradivarius head-on with his jockey resplendent in the dark blue silks and yellow cap, except they were the right owners, but that horse, Stradivarius, has got a big white head.
Oh.
And this horse didn't, you know, so...
So for most people, they wouldn't notice. But...
Most people wouldn't notice, but yeah, you tend to... The star horses, you do tend to take an interest in how they look. And
yeah,
stuff.
Okay.
And even on a quiet, mundane day at Hexham or wherever, or Newton Abbott, you know, it's if the jockey's colours are similar, you do have to look at the horse and...
You're just, looking, aren't you, then? Yeah.
You just look at... You know, the horse might have three white legs and the other one might... They all might be brown, you know?
Yeah.
It's important to make note of those, you know, just in case one of them falls at the worst possible point in the track so far as your visibility is concerned. And if you see three white legs in the air and rather than three brown ones, you know which one's which.
Yeah, certainly.
So you've got to give yourself as many opportunities to get to be right as possible.
Yeah, and you've got the caps and then and the silks and everything else, which you said you felt you had an ability to do from early on.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely, yeah. I don't know. It's just. I don't know whether it was because Dad struggled with it or he gave me an opportunity to shine. Perhaps I don't know.
Did you ever find out whether he was colourblind? I mean, is this?
No, he was never. Too late to ask him now, sadly. But he was never colourblind. That's for sure.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Two sides of the next coin in terms of question. What's your proudest race call? Have you got one you'd love to do again?
I'd like to do some of the Frankel ones again, to be honest.
Yeah, okay. We touched on that, yeah.
Yeah, I'll be completely honest. When Frankel won the 2,000 guineas, which was his amazing demolition job, he won by a long, long way. And that was... He'd won his prep races, obviously, pleasingly.
Mm.
But guineas day, he was absolutely brilliant. And I wasn't really ready for that. I'd been out the night before.
Ah.
And I remember thinking, let's just get this... Nice and smooth,
yeah.
Tucked away, no problems, and I can have an early night.
Yeah,
and of course he what he did was unreal, and I really wasn't ready for that. So I wouldn't mind a crack at that again.
Mm.
That would be, in fact, most of Frankel's I'd like to do again because They were too repetitive, yeah. Looking back.
I mean, is that just the benefit of hindsight, though? Because you wouldn't have known at the start that he was going to go and do what he did.
No.
So
no.
There's an element of naturalness.
Yeah, but then when he gets to wins 10 and 11.
Yeah, okay.
At the highest level, you're thinking, well, if you've not thought it before then, you're thinking now, this fella's a bit special, you know?
Yeah.
And I think even his last one, I was slightly disappointed with the way I handled that. Okay. So,
which ones did you enjoy? Which ones did you look back on and go, yep, yeah, nailed it?
We mentioned them before, all the great Gold Cups and Hennessy's involving, and King George's with Quarto Star and Denman.
Great.
They were just such horses that drew from you such an affection and such admiration as well. The two horses who were very different, had very different styles. Okay. Quarto Star was swift, nippy, very, very agile.
So the commentary had to match.
And charismatic. Yeah. Denman was just a grinder, a great big, they used to call him the tank. He was a great big thing. Both in their own ways, equally exciting and exhilarating to watch. So to do their big moments was fantastic. And people will always say to me now about, I don't think it was a particularly good commentary really, but when AP McCoy got his 4,000th winner in the saddle at Sleepy Toaster.
Yeah.
Because he came from quite a long way back in typical McCoy style.
Mm.
I thought I caught that one quite well. So
yeah.
that was a good one. People often will say that was a nice afternoon's work.
Yeah, I mean the BBC's allowed you to cover several other sports as well. Olympics, Commonwealth, swimming, skeleton, bobsleigh, luge. What are the big learnings there?
I think there's lots to learn, isn't there? But I think half of the lessons are all about acknowledging your limitations.
Mm, okay. I mean, there's an element in those where, you know, you could say, well, that's, they're still of a form which has a beginning and a middle and an end of a thing. So that's spot on to where you are.
Yeah. But to use the bobsleigh example, they kindly asked me to do the Winter Olympics the autumn before.
Yeah.
I'd been watching racing all of my 52 years.
Yeah.
Well, certainly 48 of them.
Yeah.
I hadn't really paid any attention to bobsleigh at all before then. So you can't all of a sudden pretend you've got this great love of the sport.
This affinity,
a great knowledge of the sport.
But then I guess you don't want to give yourself away as an interloper because you want to deliver a confident commentary.
Yeah, but I think what I did that winter, I watched all the World Cup events diligently.
Yeah.
Made notes. Got involved with a couple of people who did know what they were talking about, and I just as long as I was factual, I thought that was fine, you know. Lizzie Yarnold had a difficult winter, was the big build up to the Winter Olympics.
Yeah,
she really, really struggled, bar one event.
Yeah,
of what, 11 or something like that. So she comes in now as defending Olympic champion in really shaky form.
Yeah,
that for me was. If I was getting that across to the once every 4 year listener, viewer, that was the main thing.
That's all you need, isn't it?
That was the main thing.
Yeah.
I've got John Jackson, who happily now has got his bronze medal from Sochi round his neck, but he's the man who's got all the detail for you.
Yeah.
He'll be along in a second.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You've got to play to your strengths, and if you're lucky to be put as part of a team, I mean, who wants to hear my opinion on bobsleigh when you've got an Olympic athlete next year?
So on that point, who wants to hear opinion on bobsleigh? Maybe not too many, because they know that you're there to call the live part of it and someone else is going to be the expert. Let's just pop back to the racing as the horses, you know, file past behind us.
Yeah.
Will you have an opinion there?
Most of the time, yeah.
Yeah.
Most of the time I'll have an opinion.
Because it's not, you know, although you will have a reporter or someone down in a parade ring or speaking to the trainers, it's actually not a sport where you're generally alongside an expert while you're calling the race for them to have an immediate opinion like a pundit. So so I guess you have to sort of get across the action and an opinion on how expected or unexpected that is all at the same time.
Absolutely, yeah. And I see enough racing to be able to do that really comfortably. That's not something that concerns me at all. I mean, I did a race at Worcester yesterday, and the first race favourite, He looked uncooperative.
Mm.
This is pre-race.
Yeah.
He looked far from athletic. He looked stiff.
But enough about your producer. How was the horse looking?
he was favourite for the race.
Yeah.
And I'm quite happy to say, do you know what? I don't like his demeanour this
yeah,
horse.
Okay.
I just do not like his demeanour. I'd be surprised if he wins, but I would not be surprised if he had trouble jumping fences because he looks as though he's
not
athletic enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for me, happily, I was right that he didn't run very well at all.
Yeah.
But I'm never, ever... I always want to... If you've been watching something all your life and you've got a microphone in front of you to try and inform people and to try and help people make their own minds up as well, and I've seen something that they may not have seen, which is the important thing, I want to tell that.
Yeah, because I think in some other sports, I think maybe racing's a little unique in that area because you are the main person who's observing everything. Okay, everybody can look at the form and look at the odds, for example, but actually you're there week in, week out at Ascot, at Toaster, at any of the courses, and it's a little different to perhaps a John Motson, someone else who actually is going to call the action, but the player next to them has been in the team environment, has been the one that tries to take half a second to snatch at that half volley and score the goal, and so they're going to give you the athlete's insight, but it's probably a bit more unique in you having to
but it can apply to all the sports. I think added detail, I think, is important. We did the European Championships for Five Live swimming in Glasgow just recently, and I never forget a young British girl, Cassie Wilde, her first major championship. You didn't need to have watched one swimming race in your life to realise that she was petrified.
Mm.
Her body language was... I so felt for her,
Yeah.
She crept on the starting blocks. She was down in her start position before the other girls had got their dressing gowns off, She couldn't wait for it to be over.
Yeah.
And you could tell.
Yeah.
Straight away. And that is the added value I think you can give an event by being there and not being afraid to say what you think they're going through.
Yeah.
You're not going to be right all the time, are you? But in that instance, if you had an effects mic on her knees, they'd have been knocking loud,
You're a West Ham fan. Football must have appealed. As a job, as a football commentator.
Do you want the honest answer? Never really.
Really?
Never.
I mean, there are a lot of people that when you think about commentating, their immediate thought is, football. And in my history, I've encountered a lot of people that get in touch from university and say, have you got any work experience or I want to become a football commentator?
Yeah.
And you go, there's a lot of them there. So I think you've got to have a lot of accolade or a lot of knowledge probably to get in there. And maybe if you're more fan than you are devotee, and maybe it isn't for you, but I just wondered, having got as far as you've got, whether any conversations or any doors were there, and you thought, I wouldn't mind a go.
Now I would love to.
Right.
I would love to now. And Five Live are great. They let me do reports on Saturday afternoons quite a lot, especially when bad weather curtails the racing action. And I love, and I'll go to any match. I don't mind.
Yeah.
I'll go to Peterborough. I'll go. I've been anywhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere. I love to do football.
Yeah.
But the fact is, now gone 50 and looking at our team at Five Live, and look, TalkSport's exactly the same. They've got so many fantastic commentators.
Mm.
How am I going to get into that? And that is where base knowledge would have you exposed in 2 seconds, or lack of it.
Yeah, you'd think so, yeah.
I listened to some of those guys who can remember, that was he hit that the same way as he did against Crystal Palace in the FA Cup 3 years ago, do you remember? And I'm thinking, I don't remember what happened yesterday, let alone 3 years ago.
Yeah. So I'm not one of those encyclopedic commentators either. My 4 hours prep out of a rugby game is on the sheet in front of me.
Yeah.
And if I'm lucky enough to be bought a beer afterwards by some of them, then I probably can't remember who scored the second try at that point.
Yeah, but yeah.
I guess we're all a little different.
But that said, I'd back myself to be descriptive and to nail big moments. I'd back myself to do that. There's nothing within me that says I couldn't do it, and I wouldn't like to do it, but because I would like to do it. But it's just such a competitive field, and I'm lucky enough that I'm pretty busy. I'm pretty busy with the nags, on their own, let alone anything else.
But busy being good somewhere else, I'd say.
Yeah.
What do you think is the key to being a good commentator? You touched there on the big moments. I think those are the areas where I think people will judge you on, maybe.
Yeah, I think consistent being consistently accurate is so important.
Mm-hmm.
I would hate if people were saying, "Yeah, well, he's all right on the Gold Cup, but everybody loves the Gold Cup." Did you hear him at Stratford last Tuesday? He just wasn't bothered, you know.
Right.
And I'd hate to. You've got to tell me, Nick, to give it up if that happens. I like to put as much effort into it on the smaller days as the bigger days.
Yeah, that's a great ethic to have. Though.
Well, you see, I've always grown up thinking every race, doesn't matter how lowly, every horse has got an owner.
Yeah.
Who might be listening to you. Every horse has got someone who's probably had a fiver on it as well, who wants to know not just where their horse is, but how they're going, you know.
Yeah.
Do they look as though they might be threatening the lead? Are they coming with a late run? Are they dropping away? So, and the minute you start to say, well, those sort of details don't matter anymore, and I'll just say what's in front and what's second and what's third, I think you'd lose such a lot.
Would you like to have commentated on anything that you haven't had the chance to? I mean, we mentioned football. Anything out there that you'd love a stab at?
Not really. I say not really. Clock's ticking on my career, so I'm gonna change completely that answer. I would like to do football commentary. That would be fantastic. Okay. I'd love to do that. I would like to have, as a personal challenge, I'd like to have a go at boxing.
Yeah.
I'd love to do a bit of tennis.
Yeah.
And at a completely different pace, a little bit of golf would be fantastic as well. But you can just get greedy, can't you, really? But you did
I
ask.
I asked the question.
You did ask.
I asked the question.
You did
I
ask.
Could, a golf I could hear you on. There's, yeah. I could see that working. I mean,
I would quite like boxing. I've always enjoyed my boxing.
Mike Costello is a class act, isn't he?
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I think he's all right. No, rubbish. They should get you doing it. There we go. Is that better? We'll go down that route. What would be the two or three pieces of advice if anybody is ever listening to any of our chat and decides that commentary is for them? What do you think are the key sort of technical or physical things they need to bear in mind to get it right?
I'd say with horse racing commentary, you've just, there's no shortcuts. You've got to. I talked to earlier about my effectively given a complete year to work on it day after day after day after day. You've got to put the hours into horse racing commentary. It's as much about rhythm and filling that minute and 20 seconds than it is being able to identify the horses. We have a few youngsters come up and they say, yeah, I can do it. I've got a great memory and all the rest of it. And I'm staggered how many really fall short.
Mm.
And they fall short not necessarily because they won't ever be a commentator, but at that particular part of their stage of their life, maybe just turned 20 or something, they've just not done it enough.
Yeah.
So get yourself in front of a TV. Might sound practiced. Everyone's got a recorder on their phone these days. Just do it. See how you sound. Be critical of yourself. And just keep on practicing. It's not as easy now to get into as it was when I started. I fully acknowledge that. But practice has got to be the number one thing. In terms of your voice, I just don't know because I fear that if you haven't quite got the voice for it, you never will have.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it takes a bit of a musical ear? I've had this conversation on the previous two chats I've had. Do you think there's an element of musicality that you need to be able to hear, almost to be self-critical, to hear the voice
difficult
well?
Difficult to know how you define musicality because...
I don't think someone who's tone deaf musically would make a good commentator.
Yeah.
I'll put that out there.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And is that to do with quavers and semi-quavers or just general rhythm and beat? Or?
I wonder if it's about being able to hear oneself. And I don't know whether that's a physiology thing or whether that's a mind and sound relationship.
Yeah.
But my thinking on it is that if you're used to hearing yourself, it's the way you hear, you know, I don't know, one of your mates gives a speech and it's on a video and I hate hearing myself.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm the other end of the extreme. I love hearing myself, but I'll hear it and I'll go, yeah, that sounded all right.
Yeah, no, I get exactly what you mean.
That's fine. I don't mind that. And and occasionally I'll hear a crack on a try and I'll go, I could have done that better.
Yeah.
But I'm comfortable with my voice.
Mm.
Because I hear it a lot. And I was at drama school. I used to do singing and I hear it and I go, well, on a good day, you're a 7, 7.5 out of 10. You might make the chorus in the West End, but you're never going to get the lead role.
Yeah.
Because you have to know what you're good at and what you're not. and I just think there's got to be a relationship, an inner relationship with the voice and the ear.
I can definitely go with you on what you said there about the opening few fences of the Cheltenham Gold Cup. Four or five fences in, first comment comes from guest pundit, say Andrew Thornton, Gold Cup winner, and I can definitely relate to that feeling of you saying to yourself while someone else is speaking in that split second,
yeah,
we've made a good start here. That sounded fine. That sounded good.
Yeah,
and I'm into it. And I think it feeds. You can use that to feed on as the commentary goes on. If you know you've made a decent start, then.
Yeah.
Bring the whole show on. Let's really get going.
That's interesting, actually, then, because what I was talking earlier about where in a rugby game you would, because it's as episodic as it is, you would write the top. So, you know, good afternoon, everybody. Of course, Saracens, after their loss last week, will be looking to bounce back this week against Tigers while you're waiting for the teams to come out. And then you'll go through the team news, which you might have written as well. Now, I find that once I've done that, if that's gone nice and smoothly with the pictures, I'm off and running.
Yeah.
So then by the time kickoff comes and I'm now calling what I see, I'm in a good place.
Yeah.
Whereas interesting for you, it's actually you're already doing it, but you've just got to get the first relatively uneventful in most races, three or four fences out the way, and then you're off and running.
Yeah. Or it's even more fun sometimes if the first few fences have been very eventful.
Well, yeah.
You know? And then you're back to that old story of having to just wind your neck in a little bit as well, realising you've still got half a day left to go.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the mechanics of it are fascinating to talk about. I don't very often sit down these days and think about how things are put together, why things work, why on one day you can have a really successful afternoon and the next never really feel like you've got off the ground.
Yeah. Do you try, you know, I often think a lot of that is either routine or practice or repetition, and some people might get superstitious. Do you have any sort of match day routines? You mentioned earlier, actually, I'm now asking you three questions at the same time. I'd been out the night before.
Yeah.
Can you be persuaded to the bar once or twice, and therefore do you have to watch that?
Very seldom the night before anything now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very seldom.
Because you'll have nothing left the next day.
Well, it's just... You know, some days are difficult. Full stop. Why would you make them any more difficult by having a hangover? You know.
Yeah.
I mean, the Frankel Guineas day. I don't know what it was. It was a christening, or I don't know. It was something. He says reaching for some feeble excuse, but
they were serving beer. That's why.
Yeah, exactly.
It was tough.
Exactly. No, before big ones. Now you just can't.
Yeah.
You just can't do it. Well, I guess
over several days of a Cheltenham festival, it's early to maybe the Horlicks
games, for example. Yeah, well, what's the point?
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I'm the first one to join in for a blowout at the end of, or
yeah,
but I just don't see why jeopardize. You get sent to such lovely events.
Yeah,
don't really see why you should jeopardize it by even if you're in absolutely good shape, you'll never really be able to equate what a deadening effect it can have on you, perhaps, you know?
Well, you could have a 100% day, and the next day you might be 98% because you went out the night before. Yeah. Now, that's still pretty good, but actually...
Yeah, you know yourself. You're just a bit... Your speed of thought's not as good.
Yeah.
God damn, why did I mention that? I would have backed myself to mention that, but I didn't mention... Why didn't I mention that?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, none of it is... earth-shattering.
No.
But
your sense of satisfaction when you get back in the car and you go, good day, John.
Yeah.
Let's drive home and...
Yeah.
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 Yeah, absolutely. And then, as part of that question, is there any sort of routine that you have that you always do? Will you turn up, you know, you'll turn up a certain number of hours before? Will you eat a certain time before? Anything like that?
No, I'm completely unsuperstitious. My timekeeping in the very early days used to be terrible.
Okay.
I'd be a real last minute Charlie, but now I would always get there. I'd rather be 4 hours late.
Yeah.
Sit around talking to nice people like you. Than
4 hours early, I think you mean.
Sorry, 4 hours early. That's
the racing might have finished.
Yeah, exactly. Where's everybody gone?
It's very quiet here at Ascot this week.
I'd far rather be so miles early than late.
Yeah. We'll have to let you go in a minute so that you're not late for the first race.
No, exactly. But, eating, I mean, a colleague of mine, Mark Johnson, won't eat 4 hours before he starts commentating.
Oh, wow.
And I just, I,
I'd be ravenous.
I get the fact you don't want to have digestive biscuit as they're at the post.
Yeah,
I understand that, but no other routines like that. I'm very dull and straightforward, I'm afraid.
All right. Not to make it a macabre question, but you're being given one last sporting occasion to call. What would it be?
Oh.
And I say occasion because it doesn't need to be a 2 hours. It could be, if it's a few days.
Could be a week.
Yeah.
Well, I would have thought it would be great to... I've been so lucky in my career, and I've enjoyed the Olympic Games I've done. It would be quite nice to finish it in Olympic Games.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take the Olympic Games. I'm just going to work forward now. Let's get Japan-American Paris in the bag. That puts me...
I love this. We're actually deciding which year and which games here from a theoretical question.
Absolutely.
Go on then. Let's get there.
Exactly. So the early to mid 60s. So if I'm lucky enough to do three more Olympic Games, to finish at Olympic Games might be really good fun.
Yeah. So I'm getting on Twitter this afternoon and saying BBC's John Hunt has announced his retirement in 2000 and
yeah, exactly
30 something.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well.
I will. There will be a disclaimer within that,
mm-hmm.
saying that if after Paris and after America and after Japan, if they announce somewhere really nice,
yeah,
the 4 years,
we'll wheel him out.
That's
yeah.
right.
Okay. I mean, I'm interested in that answer because obviously you've got a Cheltenham Gold Cup week and you've got the week of entry leading up to the national and all that sort of stuff. But the Olympics is that special.
I think so. Yeah, it's you get so caught up in it. I mean, I've done London and Rio, and they were just fantastic events to be at. And within that, when Michael Phelps won his 200-meter individual medley, that was one of the best.
Mm.
I did well as a commentator, but it was one of the great. It had everything in it, all the component parts. Phelps had Lochte, his great American rival. There was a British swimmer in there, Dan Wallace, as well. There was a Brazilian, Thiago Pereira, as well, on home soil.
Mm.
You see where I'm getting to here? You know,
yeah.
This was set up to be a... The atmosphere was great beforehand, you know? And it was close up until Phelps at the final turn said, see ya.
Yeah.
And won his 21st gold or whatever it was. So that for me, like 3 or 4 minutes of broadcasting had absolutely everything in it. I love that.
Mm.
And I don't listen back to much, but I'll listen back to that because it did go well.
Yeah. Have you ever given yourself goosebumps?
I've not given myself goosebumps.
Have you ever listened back and gone, that's excellent?
No, I don't think so. I've had goosebumps during, definitely.
Oh, wow.
Definitely. And
but is that, and that's probably because of the sporting theatre that's in front of you.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. That race in Rio, a case in point.
Yeah.
We were standing up. I remember we used to drive we had a Japanese... crew behind us who obviously would sit down to do their commentaries all the time, and we were like within the first half an hour of business we were on our feet.
Yeah.
You know, I say we, Steve Parry and Karen Pickering, who I do the swimming with, and they're such enthusiasts as well, and you can just the physical feeling of being on your feet, you're tapping each other as if to say this is special, you know. I can see Steve Parry's face, his jaws dropping because it's like so incredible, and all these little parts just ratchet the whole thing up as an event.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Olympic Games. Sadly, Phelps won't be there, will he, when I finish? But someone else will be, that's for sure. That's the beauty of sport.
You never know, yeah. Well, John, there's a race that is demanding your vocal tones on it shortly, and I'd just like to thank you very, very much for your time. It's been fascinating.
Pleasure.
And enjoy the next, however many years you decide to give it. John Hunt, appreciate your time.
Thank you ever so much. Nice speaking to you.
Well, John Hunt there, what a man he is. How's that for a bloke and a guy who is... I love the way that John can occupy that space of being incredibly comfortable and confident in his voice, in his talent, but at no point during any of that conversation does it come across like he's full of himself in any way. And I think it's a great balance that he's got there, and he's clearly a top man. There was a phrase during that I actually really enjoyed where he said, you know, I was busy being happy,
What is not to love about that sort of sentiment? Clearly backs himself in what he does, but I love the fact that he was, you know, in expressing what he was doing through his 20s before he eventually fell into commentary, he was just busy being happy. I think more of us could take that lesson on board. Also, hearing him talk about his consistency and how he wants to be just as good on the smaller days as the bigger days. And I think that's really important because, you know, sometimes you might be doing a school's commentary of a football game or a hockey game or a rugby game or cricket, whatever it might be. And then it might not be too long after that that you're doing a big game and then back to a smaller game. And it is important to give as much of these equal weighting, which perhaps is also my subtext for all those employers that go, we haven't got as much money. And you go, I'm not going to give you 20% of my commentary. So why should I do it for... Anyway, you get the point. Other little bits that I found quite fascinating that John was talking about, the fact that actually when you look at a horse race, for him, and I don't know, I guess because horse races aren't timed, you're just looking for the winner, but they're not strictly timed in the way that athletics races are timed, personal best, season best, world records, that sort of thing. I don't really think about how long a horse race takes, but the fact that actually as a commentator, he's incredibly aware that, as you mentioned, it's going to be 1 minute, 20 seconds of whatever race. And his advice, therefore, to anyone out there who's considering doing it is just to do it. And that entirely rings true with some of the requests I get from people that want to know how to get into it. Can you give me some advice? I want to become a rugby journalist or broadcaster. And these days, with all the tools you have in a smartphone, you can just simply start doing it. Get your voice out there, get your words out there, whatever it might be. So I thought that was great from John. Just loving hearing how the people I'm speaking to are also enjoying analysing their own craft, and lovely to hear John sort of say, I've not thought about it in this way before. It certainly appeals to me that I'm doing something right if we're able to get such warm reflection from the people that I'm speaking to. Look, if you've enjoyed listening to this one and you haven't yet subscribed, then I hope you will, because we've got another 4 episodes of this first series yet to come over the next 4 weeks, and we've got some good ones in there, I should say that. It's not as if any of them aren't good. That was slightly bizarre, wasn't it? They're all excellent. Please leave a review. Please subscribe. Tell all your friends. Let's get more people listening and having more of a conversation about commentary. It's been great to have you along, and I'll see you again next week.
This has been a Rugby Media production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.